This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
There are short media careers, and then there are short media careers. I don't know, and I have a pretty good memory for this kind of thing. I don't know if there has been a shorter media career than Ronna Romney McDaniel's career as a paid contributor for NBC News. And she was signed with great fanfare to, depending on what report you look at, either $400,000 or $300,000. And she is out. She has been dropped by NBC News. As of yesterday, she did all of one appearance as a contributor for NBC News. And a lot of people are wondering what this means for the future of the Politics to Pundit pipeline, which is pretty interesting. Nobody knows that better than veteran broadcast journalist Dominic Carter. Dominic, you used to do a segment when you were hosting on Spectrum News, New York One in New York, of the wise guys. And it was really interesting. You'd have you, Ed Koch, Al D'Amato, and then sometimes a rotating person, sometimes Mark Green. And it was really interesting to hear three seasoned politicos acting as pundits. But I'm wondering if there's a little blowback these days to this idea, to giving all these former politicians jobs as paid media analysts.
There are several ways, Frank, that you can. First of all, let me, because I'm sidetracked. One, I have to give you credit because you were all over the bridge collapse in Baltimore as we're looking at it right now. And Fox News, you air in Baltimore. And I think you were, what, some 2 hours ahead of most of.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I also want to thank Ben at KMOX, who was one of the first people to tip us off that something was going on there. And thank especially Ray, who called in and actually went on his boat all the way out to the bridge and did live updates for us throughout the morning. But I appreciate you mentioning that. And I really think it's an indication of why it's so important to have live overnight radio, because news breaks overnight.
And it sure does.
On a couple of the stations that carry us, they don't carry all 4 hours of the program. And, you know, if you're on one of those stations, tell your station to carry all 4 hours. But people were complaining because they broke away from us and then they went to shows that were pre-recorded and great shows, but in the middle of a breaking news moment, there's nothing that really replaces live radio.
You can say that again, and remember the World Trade Center attacks happened at what, 8:25 in the morning? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, normally the morning shows are in, but it's important to be staffed 24 hours around the clock with live programming, because anything can happen at any time. Back to your original, again, kudos to you.
Thank
for
you.
Doing a great job.
I appreciate that. So now you've been working in broadcast journalism for how long? 40 years?
Almost 40 years. Okay. You're calling me an old man?
I'm not. I've got more gray hairs than you do, my friend. So we're now at a time when trust in media has hit historic lows. You know this better than anybody. News networks are making a calculated decision to rely on ex-politicians as part of their fight for relevance and ratings. They do it on the left. They do it on the right. It used to be they do it once in a while. You hire a George Stephanopoulos,
right?
Maybe a Susan Molinari.
And that one worked out.
Yeah.
That one worked out.
The Susan Molinari one obviously didn't.
Right.
Now, it's become the rite of passage. If you're a White House communications director, it's just assumed you're going to be on the cable news network that aligns most closely with your views. This is, and they've looked at statistics, this has gone up exponentially.
And it's scary and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because one, if you're the press secretary, right, and you know that you're leaving, let's say it's not known yet, but you're already in talks with the network that you plan on going to. You don't think to entice your bosses, you're going to make sure that they get the first word on certain news stories? Of course you are, because that's where you're going next to work. So the problem I have with this, so NBC let her go, right? What a day. She
right.
was there
if,
for,
right.
for a day. But yet you let Biden's press secretary do a leading talk show, and it's scary. You can, I'm sorry, Frank, you maybe you can use them as pundits on the side. Mm-hmm. You can't take a former press secretary and say you're now going to do a lead show, because no matter how many times they tell you they're not biased, of course they're biased.
Right. And I mean, one of the things that surprised me a little bit is how much they were paying Ronna Romney McDaniel, whether it was $300,000, whether it was $400,000. But
they needed the voice. They need a Republican voice.
I think it's great that they sought to have a Republican voice.
But the prima donnas that are the news anchors, she's too far right. How can you do this? And thus, yeah, it's not a coincidence. For example, MSNBC, what's his name, Scarborough?
And Joe Scarborough, right. Another former Politico.
Right. So it's not a coincidence that they're starting to lean more and more to the middle or to the left. It's called ka-ching the dinero. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I've always given Fox a bit of credit for, is Fox obviously is a conservative network, but they have Democrats on there that are very good at arguing their point. People like Juan Williams, Harold Ford Jr. And now Jessica Tarlov. Formerly they had people like Alan Combs and Bob Beckel.
And they let them state their opinion.
You know, these days, and there was a time when MSNBC had real conservatives, people like Pat Buchanan and Hugh Hewitt.
Those days are gone.
There is no one on MSNBC that differs with the party line. And so I thought this was going to be a good opportunity for the MSNBC viewer to understand.
A fresh beginning.
Yeah, well, and for the MSNBC viewer to understand that the 45 to 50% of the country that likes Donald Trump, they're not aliens from some other planet. They're Americans. And I thought this was an important perspective to have heard. And I'm just very disappointed about the whole thing.
But what they didn't account for and what's really going on is anything that's associated with Trump. Anything. They're like, how dare you? You know, we can't have that. So you had an uprising amongst the journalists at MSNBC or NBC, and thus she's gone after what, 24?
It's ridiculous.
36 hours?
Talk to me, Dominic, about the broader issue of this politics to pundits pipeline. If we look back at the last 20 years, more than half of White House press secretaries and communications directors have gone on to become paid contributors, commentators, or hosts on these programs. That's according to Axios. 10 of the last 14 press secretaries have joined TV networks after leaving government. It seems like it used to be that you'd go on TV to get more exposure so that you could work in the White House. Now it seems like you go to the White House so that you can get a TV show. Obviously, there's a perspective that you can only know about if you've been in the arena.
Yes.
But do you think it's problematic that so many of these roles in TV are going to politicians and political staffers instead of people that have worked in media historically?
It throws objectivity out the window. If is that still such a word?
That's objective? A good question.
I mean, because these days, I'm not exactly sure if it is. And for all the networks, all of them, it's okay to hire the pundits, but on each side. Mm-hmm. You hire some Democrats, you hire some Republicans, you hire some conservatives, you hire some liberals, and you mix them in with journalists, and you come out with this this great big pot that should. Do well for your viewers. But nowadays, and we use the example of MSNBC, they're like, we don't want to hear anything as it relates to Trump. We don't want to see anybody connected to Trump. And thus, they sit there telling each other the same thing over and over and over and over and over all day long.
If people want to comment, be my guest, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. My big concern about this is that you have America splintering into dozens of news bubbles based on ideology, based on wealth, based on location even. And I really think that this was an attempt by NBC
to
at least offer a little bit of another perspective. And I think it's a shame that these, you call them prima donnas, I think it's an apt description, that the on-air talent were basically able to lead this revolt.
Let me be very clear. If you're paying your lead anchor person, let's say $5-6 million a year, it's almost like the NBA, right? Sure. The coach becomes irrelevant. You go against that. You go against LeBron James as the coach. Bye bye. End of story. It's becoming the same thing with news organizations. But I want to close with this. P. Diddy's coming after you.
Because
24 hours ago, you started this discussing about him, and his problems have increased about five times since the conversation last
night.
We're
going to be on top of that. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow. If you want to comment on this, you're welcome to do so. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Either on the Ron and McDaniel firing specifically or the broader issue of the politics to pundit pipeline. This was how the MSNBC delivered the news yesterday.
There's no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I have decided that Ron and McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. He goes on to write that no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that disappointment undermines that goal. The news chairman continues to say, quote, I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility for it, says Cesar Conde, the chairman. He explains, quote, our initial decision was made because of our deep commitment to presenting our audiences with a widely diverse set of viewpoints and experiences.
Well, let me pause there. How do they think that they're presenting their audiences with a widely diverse set of views and experiences? Are they doing that? I mean, have I missed that? They fired all the people with opposing views. I mean, I'm not seeing that at all.
Particularly during these consequential times. And then in closing, this message, which again is brand new, we're airing it for the first time here on MSNBC, having come out this hour, quote, we continue to be committed to the principle that we must have diverse viewpoints on our programs. And to that end, we will redouble our efforts to seek voices that represent different parts of the political spectrum, end quote.
I mean, you know what they're going to do now. They're going to find another Trump-hating Republican and say that that's their way of having diverse views. They're going to go out and find either Chris Christie or Liz Cheney, and that will be their way of checking that box for political diversity. It's nonsense. But, you know, what concerns me here, and this is what I'd love your opinion on, 800-848-9222, is I have spoken a lot, and others have, it's not unique to me, about the revolving door between government and private business, elected officials and lobbyists. People go from being in Congress to very well-paid consultants and lobbyists. People go from regulating drug companies and energy companies to then going and working for the very same companies they're regulating. In the media, that's what's going on too. People are jumping back and forth between politics and the media. And as Dominic said, there is an important perspective that someone who's been in the arena that can bring to the table. But if they're going to use that as a platform to jump back into politics, I'm not sure that it's necessarily good for either politics or broadcasting. You know, for instance, if you're an ambitious Republican, what network do you want to be on as much as possible? Fox News. If you're an ambitious Democrat, what network do you want to be on as much as possible? Probably MSNBC, maybe CNN. And so if you could use a contributorship to go on TV like Maya Wiley did to then bolster your own chances at being an elected official yourself, I don't think that's a good thing. I recognize the importance that people who are experienced in this arena have, but I think maybe we need some instances where, you know, like how there's a waiting period between being a politician and a lobbyist, depending on the city or the state or the federal regulation, maybe there's got to be some sort of cooling off period. Now, I don't know about mandating it. I don't know. That's probably a violation of free speech, which we're going to get into as it relates to TikTok in about 5 minutes. But maybe we need something to change this process. I'll never forget in 2012, I looked at all the candidates running for president that year on the Republican side. And every single one of them that was not named Romney or an elected official had worked for Fox News. Every single one. That there was Romney, the elected officials, the current elected officials, and then just the Fox News pundits. Every single one. You had Newt Gingrich. You had Herman Cain. You had Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum. Every single one that was not an elected official or Willard Mitt Romney had been a Fox News contributor. And I can't imagine that that is a benefit to either the media or the populace to have one media outlet have that kind of sway over the political process. And I don't, and I think it leads to dishonest journalism. Now, you get someone that's a lifelong journalist. You could like what they're saying. You could disagree what they're saying. But I really, they're not going to necessarily be campaigning on the air. I don't know. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. Let me tell you what's coming up in 10 minutes. Matthew Petty is the assistant editor of Reason Magazine. He believes that this TikTok ban is a mistake. He wrote a column for Reason explaining that it's basically the kind of censorship that they would do for communist China. I don't know that I agree with that. And I'm prepared to listen with an open mind, but I don't know that I would agree with that at all. Rachel Maddow was on MSNBC celebrating the firing of Ronna Romney McDaniel.
I think it's a show of strength, and I think it's a show of respect for the people who work at this company and who make us who we are, that leadership is willing to change on this. And I'm grateful to them. You know, it's not about hiring a Republican. It's not even about hiring somebody who has Trump ties. This was a really specific case because of Ms. McDaniel's and her involvement in the election interference stuff. And I'm grateful that our leadership was willing to do the bold, strong, resilient thing.
It'd be hilarious if they hired Roger Stone now as their next contributor. I think that'd be great. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Mark in Kentucky. Hi, Mark.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Doing just peachy. Thank you.
Good, sir. The hiring of that young lady was a great hire. They missed the ball. I think that these people that run the company are on stage. They're not behind the scenes. And I'm going to say a lot. Let me tell you something, Frank. I own a moving company.
You own a what kind of company?
A moving company.
Moving company. Got it.
And I just, yesterday, my lady's coming to me. I'm moving six people out of New York this weekend and next weekend. People are leaving in droves. And the Democratic, what's going on in this country is unbelievable. Now, going back to Rachel, she will get a better job. You're in the journalism. You know what to do. You could get a job in a heartbeat if you want to.
Well, I hope so. Thank you. You know, thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call very much, and good luck with the moving. But I will say that we'll see what the future holds for her. I wonder if she's going to get paid. Because if she gets to get paid her whole, I don't know what length of time she was signed for, whether it was a year, 2 years, her whole $300 or $400, because yesterday they were saying it was a $400,000 contract, or 2 days ago they were saying it was $400,000, and then yesterday all the articles that I said $300,000. So for some reason, there was a $100,000 reduction in what was being reported about her pay. But if she can get that to sit home, as we've talked about with people like Tom Likas before, I think that's a terrific thing. For her, I would love that too. I mean, you wouldn't, because basically no one likes to be known as a public failure, especially someone in such a prominent role, but not too bad to get $300,000, $400,000 to stay home. 800-848-9222. Audrey is in Brooklyn. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, good morning. First of all, happy holidays, the Easter and
thanks.
All that stuff.
Thanks a lot.
I don't celebrate, but I'm sure you're going to celebrate, but this seems to me familiar of something like what happened with Martha Stewart, where she did something wrong and then she was penalized. But I think what happened at MSNBC is the regular reporters, this is what I believe. They was like, hell no, she got to go or we're going to go. You know, I don't know why, you know, they fired her at first, but she's going to get paid. But
well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, basically, you know, they're acknowledging that was the case, that this was an open on-air revolt. Thank you, Audrey. Before we get to Matthew Petty, let me at least get to Lisa in Connecticut. Hi, Lisa.
Hey. So, happy holidays again, too.
Thanks.
And, you know, my heart goes out to the officer and his family. You know, that's very dear to my heart because I have a lot of NYPD friends.
Absolutely.
And my ex-boyfriend that I worry about every single day. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I was listening to you about the commentary that you said about politicians on the radio. And since I've been introduced to your station, I really, really value the fact that Curtis is giving his opinion, that Rudy Giuliani is there, that Rep Wiener goes toe-to-toe with Dominic. We have these great debates. I think they're very, very valuable. And I hope Curtis does come back and wins the mayoral election, because I did vote for him the last election. And, you know, so I think that the lobbying angle, you might be right about that, but I definitely think that the commentary is really worthwhile. I learned so much after starting to listen to you and then now listen to all of your other colleagues that I'm really fascinated by it.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you. You know, I appreciate the call and I agree with most of your comments. You know, I'm a big fan of Howard Cosell. Right. I loved Howard Cosell as a broadcaster. And to me, nobody analyzed sports or did sports commentary and sports journalism better than Howard Cosell did. He was my favorite. And he, when he was getting older and more grouchy and crotchety, he would complain. And I think he even wrote a book called I Never Played the Game, but he would complain about what he referred to as the jockocracy in sports, where he described this transition that had taken place in the world of sports journalism, where all of sports journalism was now dominated by athletes, by former athletes, by jocks. He called it the jockocracy. And he explained that he thought that was a bad thing for the sports fans and for sports journalism and for sports. He said, I have a view, but to have it be only dominated by former athletes, he didn't think it was a good thing. I kind of think we're seeing the same thing when it comes to political journalism. We're seeing the politocracy. We are seeing journalism solely by politicos. And I think it's great to have a perspective of somebody that's been an elected official or that's been a paid spokesman. I don't think it should only be politicos. That's, I guess, what I'm trying to say. We'll continue with your calls in a moment. 800-848-9222. Matthew Petty joins us to talk TikTok straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy.
Hey, what up,
grab
girl?
My glasses, I'm out the door. I'm gonna hit this city.
Let's
before
go.
I leave, brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack. Cause when I leave for the night, I ain't coming back. I'm talking pedicure on our toes. Trying on all our clothes. Boys blowing up our phones. Dropped up and playing our favorite CDs. Pulling up to the parties. Trying to get a little bit tipsy. Don't stop, make it pop. DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'ma fight till we see the sunlight. Tick-tock on the clock, but the party don't stop. No, oh,
this is The Other side of midnight. I'm Frank Morano. A couple of interesting things have happened. One is we are seeing a total transformation of how young people get their news. How did you get news when you were a child? Newspaper, radio, television? Well, depending on if you're a baby boomer, Generation X, or millennial, there might be a different answer to all of those. Well, a lot of young people these days get their news from the internet. More specifically, generations, the majority of them get their news from TikTok. This has a lot of people very concerned because the parent company of TikTok, ByteDance, is a Chinese company, and there's a lot of people concerned that there are data problems, there's problems with propaganda, and there's all sorts of potential when a foreign adversary like China is the parent company of one of the most widely used social media apps in the United States. So this was one of those rare instances in Washington where you had Democrats and Republicans come together towards a ban. The House has passed a ban, or more appropriately, a bill that would force a sale of TikTok. That legislation is now heading to the U.S. Senate. Now, when I first heard the idea of a forced sale of TikTok, I thought it was a pretty good idea. It seemed kind of a common sense thing to me. You don't want the Chinese getting your data. You don't want the Chinese spying on you. You don't want 14-year-olds exposed to a steady diet of Chinese propaganda. But over the last 2 or 3 weeks, an odd thing has happened in that all of the people that I usually agree with, particularly on issues related to free speech, especially on the internet, particularly on issues related to civil liberties, every single one of them has come out against this legislation. So I'm eager to learn more and perhaps reconsider my position. One of the people that wrote a very interesting piece on this for Reason Magazine is Matthew Petty. The headline of his article in Reason was TikTok's opponents want Chinese style censorship in America. Matthew Petty is an assistant editor over at Reason. He's kind enough to join me this morning. Matthew, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Thanks so much for having me on, Frank.
So explain this legislation to us, Matt. Is there more to it than what I just described, that it would force a sale of TikTok? What else would it do?
Well, this legislation would give the president pretty broad powers to basically force out social media companies that are owned by foreigners, or foreigners have a stake in it, or the president determines this is a national security problem. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, you know, don't steal, the government hates competition. I think that's a lot of what's happening here. I mean, right, a lot of Washington politicians are very comfortable with companies like Facebook or Instagram. Well, it's owned by Meta, but yeah, Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, or Twitter, you know, censoring content for political reasons, or, you know, spying on users and handing over their data. What the problem with this bill, their problem with TikTok seems to be that there's a company that they can't pressure. They can't force TikTok to hand over data to the U.S. government, and they can't really force it to moderate or censor content based on American political concerns. And that's what has them worried. The data thing, right? All these social media companies are taking your data and selling it. ByteDance, I believe, has already made a deal to move data on American TikTok users to American servers. So if there's a threat of surveillance or data being taken, it's not because the servers are in China. It's just because all the social media companies are selling your data. And
Well, go ahead. Finish your thought. I have a lot of questions based on what you just said. Go ahead.
Sure. And as for censorship, I mean, look, competition is the, or Chinese propaganda, as you say. Most people on TikTok are Americans talking to other Americans. Yes, the parent company can alter the algorithm to make it more or less likely that you'll see things, certain types of content, but the American social media companies do that too. And the best solution to any kind of censorship or propaganda is competition. So you go on Instagram Reels and you go on TikTok, and the algorithm is not going to be exactly the same. So you'll actually get a wide variety of views. You'll get things on TikTok that American politicians don't want you to see, and you'll get things on Instagram that, well, like Chinese politicians or whoever else is putting pressure on ByteDance might not want you to see.
Well, so I guess my issue with what you just described as the upside of Chinese propaganda is, or Chinese or data collection by the social media companies, is you say, well, what TikTok is doing in taking all Americans' data or all users' data, that's being done by all the social media companies. None of the other social media companies are owned by a Chinese company. Now, you would agree, right, that in China, the government exercises more control over private companies than the American government does, right?
Sure, but let's not exaggerate. And like I said, TikTok's data on American users is being hosted on American servers. This was a deal they made during the Trump administration, which, you know, I don't think is not, it's a sensible deal. And again, this, if China or Russia or whoever wants American users' data, they can buy it, right? The whole point of these social media companies is that they're a market for you. They're a market for your data. They're selling it to advertisers. And that way, advertisers can buy the data from the companies and target advertisements. So the U.S. government, for example, there's a great article in Wired magazine a couple of years ago about how the U.S. military actually buys data from the advertising market, which is collected from all these different apps.
Sure.
And uses that to find people. So if China wanted to do that, you know, it wouldn't have to be through some secret back door in the TikTok app. They could just be buying this data on the open market. If this is people's concerns, we should be talking about, you know, data privacy laws. We shouldn't be talking about pushing out Chinese companies, which, again, is just a way for the U.S. government to have more control over the social media that you and I use.
Right. Well, I'm all for data privacy protections and things of that nature. I guess maybe this is my own naivete about how social media companies work and how big tech companies work. But even if the data for ByteDance is hosted on an American server, does that mean that the Chinese parent company could never give this to the Chinese government? I mean, what stops them from just easily transferring that data on either specific users or all the users directly to the Chinese government?
So I'm not a computer scientist, but I'm under my impression is that the servers are actually controlled by an American company called Oracle. I don't know exactly how that interfaces with ByteDance or how that works, but I mean, this deal was designed again under the Trump administration to preempt exactly this kind of concern with some kind of secret backdoor in TikTok or some kind of mass data harvesting. And, you know, again, if China wants this data, they can get it the same way that that anyone else gets it, which is buying it on the open market.
Sure. I think that's a real problem, certainly, as well. Now, what about the issue of spying, Matthew? I mean, it's certainly conceivable, and we've seen a number of different state governments and even the federal government prohibit TikTok from government-owned devices. But there might be a lot of important employees of certain, say, utility companies, power companies, or all sorts of other entities that might be of interest to the Chinese government that still have the TikTok app on their mobile phone. These phones all have cameras. They all have the ability to record and to see. Are there proper safeguards in place when this is owned by a foreign company that would prohibit spying on American citizens through this app?
I mean, look, I think that everyone should practice like sensible data security. I think that if you're an employee of a sensitive thing, then you know, maybe don't bring your phone, which is vulnerable to all kinds of viruses and spying, into a nuclear power plant or something. You know, there's no evidence that China actually does do this kind of spying with TikTok, and there's no evidence that that would be the easiest way. We've heard government officials talk about the possibility, but it's always been in very vague terms. And there is, again, you know, there's spyware out there that if they want to target you, they can get you without you having TikTok on your phone. So I think this is a broader problem. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about forgot the name of it. It was the NSO group, an Israeli company produced spyware that could, and I'm sure other countries have done this, this one just got a lot of reporting, that can infect your phone surreptitiously. So if they're really trying to target specific people, I don't think banning TikTok is going to necessarily prevent that. And also, you know, I don't think it's not, I think it's sensible if government agencies or other vital companies or organizations want to ban their employees from using a certain app. But I think giving the president the power to block websites wholesale is, I mean, it's really dealing with, like dealing with squirrels by putting landmines in your yard, you know?
So this legislation, just so I'm clear on what it does and just so the audience is clear, this would give the president newfound power if foreign companies refuse to sell, then he could actually prohibit people from downloading it on their phone. Is that what this legislation does?
I believe it prohibits app stores from servicing the app. So it's pretty widespread powers. And I don't think it's banned aimed specifically at TikTok. I think it's generally apps that are, it gives the president the power to declare a certain app a kind of security risk that could force it to be sold.
Got it. Okay. If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Matthew Petty. He's an assistant editor at Reason. Now, what about the issue of propaganda, Matthew? There's no question that there might be a wide variety of issues in which the Chinese government would seek to alter American public opinion, issues related to trade, issues related to finance, the economy, all sorts of different consumer-related issues. Is it concerning to you that the Chinese government might have the ability to alter the algorithm that controls what scores of Generation Zs are able to see?
Well, again, I think TikTok, as I said, TikTok is Americans, mostly Americans speaking to other Americans. They can change the algorithm and they can alter what, and again, there's no evidence that they've done this. They don't have a big knob that says, you know, pro-trade, anti-trade that they can turn. There is evidence that I think TikTok has moderated content more heavily that's sensitive in China. There's also clear evidence that the Department of Homeland Security in the U.S. and Department of Defense, we know from the Twitter files, have pressured American companies to change their content moderation policies. So competition is the best solution to this, giving people...
Right, but I mean, why not competition from a non-Chinese company? Why not competition from another American company?
Because the point is that, you know, a Chinese company is outside of American political pressures, right? The Department of Homeland Security can go to TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and pressure them. They can't do that to TikTok. And I think a lot of this concern about Chinese propaganda is really politicians that are, they're anxious. I mean, it's a classic justification for censorship, the idea that there's some kind of dangerous idea that's going to poison the youth. One of the authors of this, the sponsor of this bill, Representative Krishnamurti, said in the Wall Street Journal that it was really eye-opening to see all of this anti-Israel content on TikTok. And regardless of what you think about Israel and Palestine and such, it really does feel like they're a classic censorship response where this politician is unhappy with what people are saying, mm-hmm. doesn't really understand why they're disagreeing, and so blames some kind of sinister foreign entity and just tries to shut it up. Like, people, the conversations people have on TikTok are Americans talking to other Americans. And I think that's really what's bothered politicians. And the left and the right all do this. They talk about Russian disinformation or anti-Israel disinformation or whatever. This just becomes like a persistent excuse to shut up other citizens of your own country.
So your view is the fact that a company like ByteDance is actually free from the long arm of the federal government, that actually will have a beneficial effect on the kind of information and the kind of entertainment content that American users are going to enjoy because they're less likely to censor the way American-run companies do.
Yes, and I certainly wouldn't want ByteDance to be the only company. I think competition really is key here. There also has to be Instagram and Twitter, but I think this is an important part of the mix that there is a non-American company that's their set of political considerations is totally different. That actually creates an important pressure release valve.
What are the prospects for this legislation in the U.S. Senate? Do we know when it's going to be considered or what the prospects of its passage are there?
My understanding is that the Senate hasn't taken this up yet, and they might not. If they do, I think it is likely to pass, and the president said he's going to sign it. But it sounds like at the moment they're not very interested in taking this up. I think probably they're looking at a lot of the same considerations I am. Probably they have other priorities at the moment. So I'm not sure. I don't have a crystal ball, but it does look like it's kind of frozen up because the Senate isn't taking it up.
How is this legislation different from previous times where the U.S. has forced companies that were foreign to sell something? I mean, I think the most recent example that I could find was when the U.S. government forced the Chinese owners of Grindr to sell the app for $600 million to an American company with some of the same concerns. They raised concerns about the app's privacy, including the collection of personal data and all sorts of other things. How is this bill different from previous attempts to do this?
I believe the Grindr sale and also the TikTok data deal with the Oracle servers, that was not a piece of legislation that forced them to do it. This was kind of political pressure, or this was the executive branch sort of signaling that it would like this to happen and perhaps it could bring out the heavier guns. This new bill, though, would, I think, create a permanent legislative power in the hands of the president to do so. And I think also what's different about TikTok is that it's a media platform. It's not just a utility or something, or it's a very classically First Amendment protected type of enterprise. And so I think that also opens up entirely new can of worms.
Gotcha. Well, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. We'll see. While I have you here, you also wrote an interesting article about Julian Assange and the prospects of his extradition to the United States. How do you think that case is looking at this point, Matthew?
So since I wrote the article, there's actually been an update. I think the British courts have held up. This was his last chance to appeal it, and the British courts held up that appeal. Held up the extradition. U.S. can basically guarantee him certain better treatment because he's been claiming that, and I think not unfoundedly, that he's under some serious risks if he gets extradited to the U.S. There's also talks, which I wrote about, of a plea deal to make sure that to let Assange basically plea down to a misdemeanor and get off with time served. And I think, you know, that's actually really interesting that you brought that up, because I think there is a real parallel here. Like WikiLeaks, them prosecuting WikiLeaks is basically attempting to set a precedent where the U.S. government can treat a journalist, because it's not conventional media and it's not something that they're used to. They can treat this journalist as something that's not a journalist and not protected by the First Amendment. And I think this is all part of a general attempt by both parties to kind of smear their political opponents as foreign disinformation. And I think that is a very dangerous thing if we allow, as a society, this kind of rhetoric to guide our policies.
Interesting. And finally, I'm going to be talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. a little bit later. Yesterday, he officially named his running mate, Nicole Shanahan. I'm hearing increasing chatter in libertarian circles that the Libertarian Party may end up nominating him as their presidential candidate. You write for Reason. That's basically the Bible of Libertarian Party members. What are you hearing in libertarian circles about the prospects of Robert Kennedy running as the Libertarian candidate?
I've heard it's a little bit overblown. I mean, there is the real appeal that this is a third party candidate that's picked up, you know, a lot of traction lately. But at the same time, you know, he doesn't align with libertarians on everything. And I think he is also very much interested in running independently. And I think the Libertarian Party has its own nominating process. To be honest, I haven't heard much more than chatter about this, but I could be proven wrong. So, I'm not an expert on that.
Understood. Matthew Petty, you can read him in the pages of Reason Magazine. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Frank. Thanks for having me on.
If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. Are you convinced? Do you think that TikTok should be banned, or would this be a tremendous infringement on free speech in the internet age? Give me a call, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Until the top of the hour, this is the Gin Blossoms Follow You Down. This is actually a birthday bumper music selection from my wife, Rachel, who is celebrating her birthday today. And this is clearly an instance where it's the best of times and the worst of times, because obviously she'll get the opportunity to make some birthday wishes. But that also means for our household today that I will make dinner, which never really goes as well as I imagine it going. But I'm going to try my hand at some salmon. I got some good salmon recipes. I still have to figure out a side. But happy birthday to my darling wife, Rachel, the most patient woman on the planet, and not a bad looker either, I must say. Hey, speaking of Rachel, yesterday the Mega Millions jackpot was something like $1.3 billion. I said, let me spend 10 bucks on a ticket and on my way in. And by the way, I stopped at a gas station. I happened to need gas anyway as I was driving in. And there was a line of people, not joking, at maybe around 9 o'clock, 9:30, six or seven people all in front of me waiting to buy Mega Millions tickets. So I have not looked at the winning numbers, nor have I looked at my ticket. Now, right now, what you're about to hear is going to be the first time that I will be seeing if I have won. It's very exciting. I asked my wife, I texted her, did she want me to, because I could see her, if I won the jackpot, being kind of sore that I shared it with all of the radio listeners first, and not, you know, and not her. So I said, do you want me to call you so that you can at least hear, you know, the live segment on the radio and then react to it on air? Her response was just, honey. No, that's it. No exclamation point, no period. That's it. Just honey. Now, this is a big jackpot, a huge jackpot, one of the largest in lottery history. The chances of winning it are about 1 in 300 million. Actually, to be accurate, it's 1 in 302 million. And if you're wondering what that is about the same as asking someone to pick 1 second out of their past 9 years of life and then guessing the correct second. It's about the same chances. So let's see how we did. This is going to be very, very exciting. I think a radio first, if we go through the winning numbers on the air, and I have them. All right. First number is 7, which I have. Okay. We're 1 for 1 at this point. Next number is 11, which I don't have on the same one that I have 7. So I will circle 11 on the other one that I have. So it's not looking good. But by the way, you know what I'm also unlucky in? Finding pens that work here. I mean, none of these pens seem to have any ink. I'm trying to circle the 11 here. Okay. The next number is number 22. No, that's not on my one with the 7 or the 11. The next one is number 29. No, I don't have that one anywhere. Next one is number 38. That is another number that I don't have anywhere. And the Powerball number, or the Mega Million number, whatever they call it, is number 4, which I also don't have. So I got one number on 3 different drawings. So I did not win. I don't know if anybody else won. If you did, congratulations. But let's say winning ticket for $1.13 billion jackpot sold in New Jersey.
Really?
I happen to have a lot of friends in New Jersey. Let me tell you something.
Wow.
If I had won this and you're the person that wins, I would probably share with you. So, you know, keep the Frankster in mind. All right, congratulations to that New Jerseyan that won. And I'm sorry to my wife, I would have loved to have delivered for her on her birthday like that. But she'll have to settle for some wild salmon. All right. In the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.